Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright.
That is a lovely new dress, Jenna Wolf.
Thank you very much. It is
very
new.
Very nice. Yeah, I know.
I never worn it before. Appreciate that. We got a little spring thing happening between the three of us. Here, big show today. Russell Wilson is indeed staying in Seattle. The Sixers did indeed bounce back in a big way last night, but we have to start out west. Warriors looking to go up 2-0 in their series with the Clippers. First quarter, Boogie Cousins goes down hard with a quad injury. He is likely done for the season. Warriors led by as many as 31 in this one, but the Clippers crawled all the way back less than a minute to go. Lou Williams to cut the lead to 1. Next possession, Landry Shamet drilling 1 from deep. Clippers go up 2. Steph did have a chance to win it at the very end. Play little hero. Not on this night, Steph. Clippers pulling off the historic comeback to beat the Warriors 135 to 131. This series is now tied at a game apiece. Here's Steph Curry on Golden State's late-game collapse.
I think that's something about our team that we've been able to prove and demonstrate on a time after time, and our resiliency has to be there. So it is tough. It's going to sting a little bit, just, you know, understanding how precious every game is in the playoff series, for sure.
Look, this was a late game. I'm sure a lot of people went to bed late thinking, all right, halftime, they're 31-point lead. There's no other way but one. This is going to end up. What was your reaction to how the Warriors blew this lead, Nick?
This is inexcusable for them. And I understand the bigger story is probably Boogie, and we'll get to Boogie. Yeah. And Durant's continuing to have issues. We'll get to that. But
most people, Jim, not Nick Wright, myself, you had gone to bed earlier. Nick stayed up at least till halftime. Had a little wager.
I had a wager on the game.
They were up 23 at halftime. End up being up 31 in that third quarter.
Right. So you had 20. I'll be honest. Steph goes on that run at the end of the first half. If I didn't have Clippers plus 13.5, I'd have gone to bed with everyone else at halftime because the game was over. The only thing in question was the spread. They're up 31 with 20 minutes left in this basketball game. With less than 8 minutes left in the third quarter, they are up 31 points. But right around the time they went up 31, about a possession before, Steph picked up a cheap foul. Steph goes to the bench, does not return for the rest of that quarter. And, oh, riddle me this. In that last 8 minutes of the third quarter, the Clippers go on a 36-12 run to cut the lead to just 14 points. Now, for some context there, NBA teams in the playoffs had won 110 straight games when leading by at least 14 points going into the fourth quarter. So that should have been enough. The 31 should have been enough. The 23 at halftime should have been enough.
The fact that it was the Warriors should have been enough.
But it wasn't enough. And this is, will the Warriors lose this series? Absolutely not. But we now know at a bare minimum they have 3 days less rest going into the next round. Game 5 and Game 4, those are 3 days apart. We now know they're going to have to take an extra flight. We now know that the Clippers go home to Staples saying, man, if we can just get a split. And we now know with the Boogie injury, their insurance policy is gone. Not that they necessarily need him, but they really can't lose anyone, even if it's just for a week or two. This was a worst-case scenario. Check all the boxes. Starter gets injured, blow a huge lead. KD continues in his weird funk with Beverly. So all of this bad news for Golden State.
This is a type of loss in a season because, Nick, from the beginning, from a historic standpoint, from the beginning of the season, we knew that there would be obstacles for them to get over. What would the distractions be? Boogie Cousins back joining the team. They end up getting through that. They had a couple little skirmishes, Draymond and KD. They were able to get through that. But these are the types of things and the reasons why you don't see teams three-peat that often. And that's what this team is trying to go for. They're trying to go for that historical three-peat with Kevin Durant joining them. And these are the type of games. You'll see a big loss at home against a team that they should beat. That's what Golden State is going through. Now, what I think is more important than the loss is the injury. Because you can recover from a playoff loss. We've seen teams that were favored in series be able to come recover from a home loss. But Boogie Cousins, if he's done for the season, which I believe that he will be, what do they do then? Now, Andrew Bogut, when they signed him, they didn't sign him as a starter. They signed him as a spot duty, a guy to come in, play some defense, give them some energy, understands the system. But I'm more worried about Boogie Cousins and the injury than I am anything else with the Warriors. Leading into the playoff series, they asked Draymond Green, who do you think is the biggest, who are you worried the most about? Ourselves. We're mm-hmm. We can only defeat ourselves. Well, injuries, internal fighting, getting in KD's head. Those are the things that are currently going on. I think the NBA playoffs just got a lot more exciting last night with the Warriors losing and Boogie Cousins being injured.
Is there something, Nick, aside from an insurance policy that you lose without Boogie Cousins?
Well, yeah, you lose the ability to give Steph and KD simultaneous rest and run the offense through them. Like, that was the other benefit, was you were going to be able to play Steph and KD fewer minutes. Your offense wasn't going to go and die because Boogie was going, you were going to be able to give him his touches there. And this is, see, we talked about before the show, the looks of it is, I thought Barkley did a good job talking about it because he suffered a torn quad, and the still images where you see Boogie's thigh, this doesn't look like, as you've alluded to, Jenna, it doesn't look like it's just he's out for the series. It looks like he's going to be out for the next few months, which, of course, would knock him out for the postseason.
Yeah, this is a huge injury because you talk about the rest part, but also how the Warriors want to play basketball. They want to be able to spread the court. They want to be able to pass the ball, the overall movement. So Steph and Klay, ultimately, they wear you out. Boogie Cousins, with his ability to be able to shoot the three, he is such a good offensive player. So it's not just, oh, we have a good sub. No, you have an NBA all-star. He can start on any team in the NBA. Boogie Cousins was going to be their insurance policy, and now that they've missed that, their offense will suffer because the team is made to have Boogie Cousins starting.
Right.
Go ahead.
Did you see anything in this game last night that makes you think the Clippers could do this again, maybe two more times?
Could the Clippers win one more game in this series? Maybe. What I saw, and I know we're going to talk about it more, is Kevin Durant needs a Patrick Beverley exorcism. See, we talked a lot about Patrick Beverley before this series, and the idea that he is the type of guy that can be a pest, can be a pain. I thought they would have him matched up on Steph. They decided to do something very interesting, match him up on Kevin Durant and have him annoying Kevin Durant. KD gets kicked out of the first game and fouls out of this game. More turnovers than field goal attempts, but I just want to circle back to Boogie just for a moment. You guys know how much I like to bring up NBA history. The last team we saw three-peat was the Los Angeles Lakers. The year they were going for their fourth title, in the first round, Rick Fox, in game four of the first round, turns his ankle and is out for the rest of the playoffs. He was their least important starter, but he was a starter. All of a sudden, Devin George is now a starter. All of a sudden, Stanislav Medvedenko is getting minutes. No, they still had Kobe. They still had Shaq. They're going to be fine. But they lost a starter in round one. And in round two, they played the team that was the most equipped to beat them in the entire playoffs, the San Antonio Spurs. And the Spurs took advantage of that. They took advantage of the lack of continuity within the team, that the guys were a little sick of each other. And they ended the Lakers' quest for a four-peat in six games. In round two, the Warriors are going to be facing the Houston Rockets. They're not going to have their fifth most important starter. They are going to have to elevate someone else to the starting lineup. There is a little bit of, oh, that kind of reminds me of when the Lakers lost a guy that we didn't think was that important. Of course they can win without him, and what it did to the rest of the rotation, what happened to them in the following round.
I mean, losing a starter is very important, but Boogie Cousins is not just a normal starter. He's an NBA All-Star. In quarters of games, in halves of games, in a complete game, you have someone who can take over the game. Rick Fox never had that ability. Now, when you start losing people that have been involved in your system, those role players, there's a reason why there are role players. Now, Kevon Looney had a tremendous game last night. They still lost. Bogut is not fit to play 20 to 30 minutes of NBA intensity, so they're going to have to be able to fill that void within. It's not an offseason to be able to do that. They have to do that within the season with the roster that they have, and I believe it will be problems for them because they have not – it hadn't been a great regular season, just like we expected the Celtics. Oh, can the Celtics hit the switch? We thought the Warriors, because they're talent, they could hit the switch, and they're even having a hard time hitting that switch.
And with that said, and the Boogie injury is the bigger story, if people didn't watch this game, if they went to bed, Boogie got hurt early in the first quarter. The Warriors were actually down by one when Boogie got hurt.
Yep.
They built the 31-point lead without him. The Boogie injury is the bigger story, but it is not an excuse for what happened yesterday.
Course.
What happened yesterday was an inexcusable loss for a team and an inexplicable loss for the two-time defending champs.
All right. It does indeed make the Warriors at least a little bit more vulnerable as they move forward. We'll talk more about this game, talk some football on the other side, some big news. The Seahawks locking up Russell Wilson. Next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. Welcome back. We'll get to Russell Wilson in a second, but first, Nets and Sixers, Spencer Dinwiddie dishes to Jared Allen for the alley-oop.
Jared Allen had his work cut out for him last night. Sixers were offensively as good as you've seen them all year, particularly
yes.
That third quarter. Blitzed
all right.
them.
Warriors, Clippers, Draymond. Finds Kevin Durant for the big alley-oop.
One of the few highlights Kevin Durant had, he only took 8 shots, 21 points before his early exit, getting in foul trouble. Draymond, one of the better passing forwards we have in the NBA, finds him on the backdoor cut.
Get up there, KD.
More from this game. Patrick Beverley picks Steph Curry's pocket, drops a dime to Danilo Gallinari.
This is one of the things that started the comeback.
Yep.
You know, Patrick Beverley hounding the ball out front when he wasn't on KD. He was on Steph. This play right here late in the game started that huge comeback for the Clippers. Amazing.
This was the Clippers had pulled it close, but it looked like the Warriors were going to be fine. This was an enormous emotional play.
A little baseball this morning. Cleveland, Seattle, Greg Allen making a nice diving catch to rob Ryan Healy of extra bases.
That's an athletic play right there. He had to get on his horse. It was in the gap. Ball coming back to him off a right-handed batter. The ball's trailing. That's the spin of the ball. It's coming back into him. But very athletic play.
Look at that. Jackie nice Robinson day yesterday in Major League Baseball.
To the NFL now. Russell Wilson had given the Seahawks until midnight last night to get a new deal done. And after both sides worked through the night, Seattle reportedly made Russell Wilson the highest paid player in the NFL. It is a 4-year extension worth $140 million, $65 million guaranteed. So Wilson, along with his lovely wife, Ciara, made the announcement on social media just a few hours ago.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, we can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
Okay, it was an interesting way to do it, but it was still done nonetheless. CeCe, what was your reaction to Wilson's record deal?
I mean, not surprised at all. Seattle had to sign Russell Wilson. Why would you even waste a franchise tag on your quarterback? The reason why we saw the franchise tag previously used with Kirk Cousins was because Washington didn't believe they had a quarterback.
Right.
That's why they franchised. Well, we don't believe we have one. We still don't believe we have one. They franchised them twice. Seattle, they know they have a championship quarterback, one of the top guys in the league. And get used to this headline. Signing, this quarterback is now the highest paid. Over the next 2 years, this will probably change 5-6 times. Like, we have that many young quarterbacks that are coming up for deals. Russell has a better resume than all those young guys coming up. He deserved it, just like Aaron Rodgers last year deserved it. He's got 1 year left on his contract at $35 million over those 4 years. I like the fact it's not a long deal, 7, 8, 9 years like that. It's in his sweet spot. Russell's going to get another contract.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wants to go to New York, his wife wants to go to New York later on, they're going to have that ability in 5 years. But good deal for Russell. Great deal for the other quarterbacks that are trying to be paid after this. And a great decision by Seattle right now, because that franchise, with their owner dying in the past year, you know, their decision-making, will it be as consistent as it has been the last 6 years? So that's something to watch. I believe Seattle was forced to do this deal, though.
And they got it done right under the wire. Like, deadlines make deals. And Russell tweeted that out at 12:44 a.m. Pacific time. So evidently the deadline was, I guess, like midnight, April 15th Pacific, because they're out on the West Coast, and it got done shortly before that. This is a great deal for the Seahawks. I had talked a lot about that if the Seahawks weren't going to use Russell Wilson, then maybe they should see what they should get for Russell Wilson. But none of that was because I didn't think Russell Wilson was great. I think he is still somehow one of the most underrated players we have in this league. So 4 years, $140 million, tacked on to the 1 year, $17 million he already has. So they have him for 5 years, $157 million. That's the going rate, and it's a little bit of a bargain. It's $31 million a year for a quarterback. Had they gone the franchise tag route, they would have had him for the next 3 years for $83 million. So they get him guaranteed for another 2 years for an extra $74 million. That's fine money. That it's top-of-the-market money. But for a top-of-the-market player, you only get yourself in trouble doing these deals when you pay top-of-the-market money for a mid-tier player. If we switch positions, the Nate Solder deal isn't a bad deal if Nate Solder is one of the very best left tackles in football. It becomes a bad deal when he's a middle-of-the-pack left tackle and you pay him like he's the best. Russell Wilson is, of all the quarterbacks that aren't already minted gold jacket guys, Russell Wilson's the best. He's the best of his era of quarterbacks. He's the most proven of his era of quarterbacks. And of every quarterback in the league, he's the least health concern. He's never missed a game. In the last 2 years, he's only missed 5 snaps. And they average almost 12 wins a year with Russell Wilson. It would have been crazy for them to move on. Now, if he would have held to his reported demands, I want a percentage of the cap, then maybe this doesn't get done.
Right.
He came off that. They got a realistic deal done that pays them at the top of the market, and now Seattle can move forward.
Well, the question that every team has to ask themselves before they head into the regular season is did we get better? Did we spend this offseason getting better? And you talked about a lot of needs that this Seattle offense has. They put a lot of money into Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Is this team in a position now to go ahead and compete in that division, or they still need to shore up a couple places?
Well, ever since they've had Russell as their quarterback, they can compete. Does the team need to get a lot better? Absolutely. Nick talked about from a playoff standpoint in that game, just being a dominant running team, you know, is that enough? Or do you pay a quarterback that's on a team that is a dominant running team? So they need other variables as far as trying to win games. They still haven't had a tight end to be able to affect the offense with their wide receivers outside. So their defense is young, up-and-coming defense, and Pete Carroll is going to always play good defense. But are they going to sign Frank Clark or trade him away from a defensive end standpoint? They put the franchise tag on him. So they have to have a pass rusher. They have a good defense. But Seattle, to me, is still not as good as the Rams. So they're still going to be chasing the Rams. But as long as you have Russell Wilson, you have a chance in that division.
And for me, a lot of the Rams' optimism will be surrounded by how healthy is Todd Gurley. What does Todd Gurley look like? Is he the Todd Gurley we'd seen over the last couple years, or is he the Todd Gurley we saw over the last couple of games? Because we know Seattle has the best quarterback in that division. I feel like they have the best coach in that division. And last year was a down year for Seattle. It was the second worst year they've had since Russell was there. They won 10 games. So in a down year, their worst year was 9-7 the year before. That was their rebuild year. So part of what they did last year was invest in young defensive players via the draft. You should see some returns on that this season just because those players will get better. Now, do they need a better offensive line? Rinse, repeat. For the last half decade, it seems like need a better offensive line. They spent a first-round pick on a running back, Rashad Penny, that had a bunch of healthy scratches last year. They obviously need more pass catchers, but getting Russell Wilson there keeps them, to me, at the top of the playoff discussion.
Let's not forget who's on the Rams. His name is Aaron Donald. And let's not forget who Seattle's offensive line is. Nobody on that interior. And I believe that Sean McVay is approaching that. We'll have him in the conversation. Is he the best coach in the NFC? Because he will match Pete Carroll play for play. And I know Pete Carroll is spending extra time trying to figure out that offense. How does that offense operate if Todd Gurley's not 100%? That's one of the Rams' offseason questions that they have to get answered.
All right. Russell Wilson remains in Seattle. Take a break, talk some basketball. Is Kevin Durant to blame for the Warriors' record-breaking collapse? Next on First Things First.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Check out Premier Boxing Champions Saturday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It is time for stories to start your morning. Zion Williamson is one step closer to lighting up the NBA next season, as expected. The Duke sensation declared for the NBA draft. Many believe he'll be the number one overall pick. Nick, where's the best place for Zion to end up?
I'm hoping it's Atlanta. I think that team's got a really exciting young core, particularly with Trae Young. I think his game and Trae's game will be complemented perfectly. And for a guy that's going to need to go to a team with good spacing, having a guy who can pull up from 35 is great. I hope the Atlanta Hawks win the lottery.
Yeah, I'm worried about the fried food there. He'll be 350 pounds in Atlanta. I'm trying to send him right here to New York. My man Scott Perry, let's develop him. Or we might have to package him for Anthony Davis.
I was going to say, if he gets sent to New York, he might get sent somewhere else right after.
That's okay. New Orleans, he'll only be like 290.
What's he going to weigh in New Orleans?
Yeah, just relax, man. Relax. I'm working stuff, man. He's going to be a big dude, man. He was a big baby. Big babies end up being big grown men.
After moving on, after winning his 15th major on Sunday, the gambling world is behind Tiger to keep the ball rolling. Tiger Woods is the favorite to win the PGA Championship next month at 8-1. See, how do you like Tiger's chances?
His chances in tournaments where there are four par fives. The U.S. Open, typically, there are only going to be two par fives. But at the Masters, at the PGA, typically, there are going to be four par fives. The way he's hitting his driver now, he has that advantage back. His putting skills, the new technology, the overall confidence that Tiger Woods has. Listen, let's look at the last three majors. Not only the Masters, let's go back to the British Open and the PGA from last year, and we can throw in the Tour Championship in Atlanta where he won that. So Tiger Woods should be the favorite.
Usually Tiger's odds are grossly inflated because the public likes betting on him so much. And I'm sure they're slightly inflated here, but he should be the favorite. He's won there before. No player on tour, as you mentioned, has a better score to par over the last three majors than Tiger. Mm-hmm. In the last three majors, he's led on the back nine in two of them. And the other one, he was one shot off the lead on the back nine. That was at the PGA last year. I think Brooks Koepka is going to be a good bet in this. We'll see about Dustin Johnson. But Tiger, listen, Tiger going to be my pick. I'll tell you that right now. And I'm glad that it's no longer just a hope and a prayer pick. It's a realistic pick.
Nick is looking for another religious experience.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the NBA now. Some bad news for the Pistons. According to reports, Blake Griffin is likely out for the entire first round series against the Bucks with that knee injury. Nick, does this effectively end Detroit's season?
No, their season effectively ended when the playoffs began and they drew Giannis and the Bucks. But this ends any chance they have, in my eyes, of even forcing a fifth game. It's unfortunate for Blake how well he played.
Oh, man.
He's going to be on an All-NBA team, I believe, this year. He might get some fifth-place MVP votes. It's a shame we're not going to get to see him in the playoffs when he carried that Detroit team. But they're being cautious with him, because they know, even with him, they can't beat the Bucks, and that's smart because they have such an investment in him moving forward.
I like the point as far as him having a great regular season. That's what we should be pointing out. It was going to be a tough matchup. You'd like to see him versus Giannis in the playoffs. That's what the playoffs is about. But Detroit is doing the right thing. Proceed with caution with him. He is the star of the future. He is the face of that franchise. Not like the Clippers when they put his face up there, then they traded him and everything. But no, great regular season by them just being in the playoffs with Blake.
Absolutely right.
All right, finally, boy, tough couple of games for Kevin Durant. Ejected from game one with two technicals. Last night, more turnovers than field goal attempts as his team blew a 31-point lead, all while trying to deal with a very pesky Patrick Beverley. Nick, what is going on with Kevin Durant this series?
Well, listen, Patrick Beverley going to get in your head. The Warriors' Steve Kerr warned him that it's going to happen, and KD hasn't dealt with it well. But yesterday, last night, that's never happened to Kevin Durant in his career. Game one, he gets ejected. It was kind of a soft second technical. Fine, but they're winning that game. It doesn't really matter. Yesterday, Kevin Durant's never had a game in his career where he had more he had nine turnovers and eight shot attempts. He's only had eight games in his entire career where he has more turnovers than makes. He's never had a game with more turnovers than takes. For him to foul out of that game, for him to not be able to take advantage of Patrick Beverley, it shows you, A, the KD, which he has gotten more than gotten by throughout his entire career without having any real bulk and strength. Beverly's stronger than he is. And Kevin Durant, much like LeBron his first year in Miami, does not love the post-up game. He's more developed in the post-up game than LeBron was his first year in Miami, but it's not his go-to. Because if it's his go-to, you can post him up on Patrick Beverley. That shouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's not what Durant wants to do. And Durant seems annoyed by Beverley to the point to where he is not playing his own game. The skill discrepancy there is as big as we can get in sports. Durant is arguably the most skilled seven-footer we've ever seen. Beverley had to start his professional basketball career in Russia. He has got there based on effort and effort alone. And Durant said, listen, I played against him when he was in Arkansas. I know what he brings. Well, you need to take advantage of it. And yesterday when Steph went to the bench in the third quarter with those four fouls, that was an opportunity for Durant to take over that game or at least stave off the Clippers, and he was unable to do it.
You know, this has been kind of the story of Kevin Durant ever since we found out he had the burner accounts. Along the way, man, he has let us in and shown us a side of him that we don't like to see. And Kevin Durant is not, and I learned this from LeBron James, everyone can't be the villain. Everyone can't be a tough guy. Like, we got Steven Jackson coming out here, man, born and raised tough. That's part of his brand. A lot of people talk about it like they want to be tough. Like, KD is saying, no, me with these 17 technical fouls leading the NBA. Would have been suspended if the season was longer than 82 games. He would have been suspended. He's already got two technical fouls in the playoffs where you can only take seven and you're going to get suspended. So if they go through multiple series, how many technicals is he going to get? And is he going to face a possible suspension? But for me, he needs to stop trying to be the tough guy and the villain. You're not that. You're not that. You say you just want to play ball. That's all you want to do, play video games and play basketball. Well, you're not playing your best basketball. Allowing a guy, and at every level, you have a guy like Patrick Beverley. Not in the NBA. College, high school, when you're learning how to play, you always, if you are a superstar, especially scoring the basketball, you're going to have someone. And it's not about talent, Nick, because defense is not about talent. Right. It's about effort. It's about heart. It's about mindset. And Doc Rivers has given this team the recipe, and one of them is we're going to put Patrick Beverley on Kevin Durant, and he is going to harass him and get into his head, and that's going to be part of our way to victory.
Because there was supposed to be no matchup for the Clippers on KD. Most teams obviously don't have a matchup for KD, but to put Beverley on him, it seems illogical. You'd think we'll put him on Steph, but Steph wouldn't let him get in his head.
Yeah, a lot of times a guy like Patrick Beverley, and Nick, you have chronicled his past and how hard it was for him to get to the NBA. A guy like that will stand up in the locker room and be like, Coach, I'll take him.
Yep.
And then the other guys gain confidence because their assignments become a lot
easier.
But he is the heartbeat of how they're trying to do things. And KD, this should be an easy assignment for him. Golden State, what they should do is post him up in the lane. But don't throw the ball to him in the post. Have him set a screen down on him and have him come out to the wing and get the ball. You can't, like him, be facing Patrick Beverley at half court. He has too much ball pressure, and KD is not a great passer of the basketball, right. And that's what you started to see with the turnovers when they put that ball pressure on him.
But it was a bad look for him during the game and after the game, and then he skipped the press conference. He and Draymond Green didn't show up for the press conference afterwards. I understand you don't want to be a leader. You are a leader on this team. Show up and take it.
So here's the thing. People get upset about press conferences being skipped, people in the media, and it seems like they're protecting their brethren in the media. I don't care about the media part of this. I care that Steph now has to go answer all the questions. Forget if it's unfair to the media. It's in your player. Forget that part of it. It's unfair to Steph. It is when you have the biggest blown lead in the history of the NBA playoffs, and where Steph, by the way, had a tough second half himself. Steph missed the potential game winner. Steph doesn't want to be up there, but he's up there. Hey, Draymond, whatever. Draymond's not the superstar. Kevin Durant, to book it before he answers any questions, forget sitting on the podium the way he's supposed to in the playoffs. At least answer questions at your locker. It's unfair to your coach, and it's unfair to your best player, Steph Curry.
Well, I'm not too concerned with Steph Curry. Steph Curry's brand is to handle this. The reason why we say, well, why is Steph Curry the most valuable? It's not only on the court. It's by his brand and everything he's going to do off the court. So for me, typically, and when you ask, when someone is removed from the press conference, it does put more questions, but it's not more pressure. Sure. Like, what are you going to ask Steph Curry? Like, we lost a game. He was like, every game is important. It gave us another opportunity to be like, you know something? I like that guy. That's how much pressure Steph has on him. He faced the reality. All these teams are going to face us. We didn't play as well, and we actually took one of these precious games for granted. And I'm just, if I'm a Warriors fan at Oracle, like, I don't even know what to expect to see when I come to the game. They had 334 sellouts in a row. Like, how, when I go to the game, what am I going to see? Up by 31 points. The last time I came here, I spent my hard-earned money. One of the best players in the world, Kevin Durant, got thrown out of the game with a 20-point lead late in the game. Totally unnecessary. And now in this game, he has what? 9 turnovers? Only 21 points? He only took 8 shots?
9 turnovers, 6 fouls, 8 field goal attempts.
Right.
I don't know how it happens.
All right, let's move on to the other game. Sixers, after a lackluster Game 1 performance, Philly came storming back in Game 2. They beat the Nets 145-123. That ties that series up at a game apiece. Ben Simmons followed up a terrible first game with a triple-double in this one, while Joel Embiid at 23-10. CeCe, did Ben Simmons and the Sixers ease any concerns with their win over the Nets?
I don't know if they eased any concerns. I mean, they had to win this game. I mean, what are they going to do? Go down 0-2 to the Nets, going back to Brooklyn? So, no, I expect them to come out with the energy. I thought that what Brooklyn did as far as spacing the court, presenting some problems as far as the number of guards that they can throw at them, that was one of the things I took from the game. But Philadelphia, I expected. I expected them to be very aggressive. And Ben Simmons from the start was very aggressive. Basketball is about getting to your spot. And they did a good job of setting picks for him in the lane. They allowed Ben Simmons to get a whole head of steam and come downhill on him. And I'm sure that the Nets will have a better game plan defensively going against him, because at 6'9", you're talking about what he does well, putting his body in position and getting into the lane. That's the best offensive skill that he has.
Yep.
I mean, he gets in the air. He don't know if he's going to shoot it left-handed, right-handed. But if you allow him to dribble 35 feet away from the bucket and you stay 15 feet off him, he's going to get too much momentum, put his body on you, and be able to put you up under the goal.
And that's what was so frustrating in Game 1. They're playing off him because he can't shoot and he won't shoot. But that doesn't mean you can't take advantage of it. Even a guy who can't shoot or won't shoot, if he can get a head of steam going to the basket with his body, with his strength, that can collapse a defense.
And Brett Brown did a couple different things where they were able to put their big guy in the middle to build a set of picks. So he was able to get a brush screen on trying to drive to the hole. So that was able to help him a couple times finish right at the rim.
Ben Simmons was the best player on the court yesterday. He was the difference. And it was a must-win game for Philadelphia. Falling down 0-2 in any series is bad. Falling down 0-2 at home is a death sentence. It's over. But I do, and he gave you 18, 10, and 12 through three quarters. The reason I'm glad people got to see it was, if people weren't watching Philly during the year, he was 17, 9, and 8 in an average game in the regular season. Ben Simmons' bad games look awful because he's refusing to shoot. And when he doesn't have the ball in his hands on offense, he's a detriment, because it's one thing to not guard the guy with the ball in his hands. We just talked about how he can still take advantage of you. But if you don't have to guard the guy on offense who doesn't have the ball in his hands, now you're playing 5-on-4 defensively, and it can really make the offense stagnate. I think on their first 9 baskets, he scored or assisted on 6 of them. He helped get Embiid involved. He and J.J. Redick finally had a 2-man game going that they should have had going from the beginning. And that third quarter was as good offensive basketball as we'll see in these playoffs all year. They had a 51-point quarter, because after I thought they played well in the first half, you look down and you're like, wait, what's the halftime score? Oh, wait. Philly's barely ahead. Mm-hmm. Like, the Nets are right there. It felt like Philly should have been up 8 to 10 points, and they were up 1 point at halftime. And that third quarter is where they took full control of this game, and I think potentially control the series.
Well, you're going to need that from Ben Simmons, especially if you don't know what you're going to get from Joel Embiid. But how far can this team go if Ben Simmons plays like Ben Simmons could potentially play?
Yeah, he's not going to be able to play like that. One of our critiques as far as Ben Simmons is not, it's about what his potential was. Ben Simmons should be on the board to be the face of the NBA. At 6'9", as athletic as he is, it should be that way. But his inability to shoot prevents that. So I expect this. When you get to Brooklyn, they're going to tighten up. They're going to put more ball pressure, say 20 to 25 feet on him, so he doesn't get a running start downhill. That's what these series are about. They are about adjustments. And Ben Simmons, His has been about being inconsistent offensively. So I don't expect this. Joel Embiid, I'm worried about his playing weight. missed, only played 10 of the last 24 games of the regular season. You can see that he's a lot bigger. He's lumbering. That knee started giving him problems even in last night's game. So to me, that's the concern. Ben Simmons is who he is. Regardless of what Chris Carter thinks, it is what it is. Dude cannot shoot outside of 5 feet. That ain't my fault. That's his fault.
Right, and I understand that your standard of to whom much is given, much is expected, and we want people to reach their full potential, and the frustration that his game didn't grow from year one to year two. But who he is right now is, as presently constituted, an all-star. As presently constituted, one of the 30 best players in the league. A guy who last year in the postseason against Miami was outstanding.
Last night he was, Nick. In game number one, the stat sheet say he wasn't.
No, in game number one, right, but this is now after game two. He got filleted for how bad he was in game one. Yeah. And so what I'm saying is...
Well, if he's supposed to be an all-star, aren't you supposed to be consistent if you are an all-star?
Listen, Kyle Lowry had a 0 point game one playoff game. Other guys had bad playoff games.
Expectation of Kyle Lowry compared to what your expectation of Ben Simmons are?
Honestly, around Ben Simmons a little bit higher, not much higher. Kyle Lowry's been an all-star.
Wait a second, Nick. You're the only one covering the NBA that would say, oh, my expectation of Kyle Lowry are the same as Ben Simmons?
What? Kyle Lowry's the second best player on the two seed. Ben Simmons is the second best player.
As far as a pro career, there is no one that has that same opinion.
I'm not talking about their potential moving forward. I'm talking about right now, this week, this month, what the expectations in these playoffs.
The reason why Kyle Lowry, he's had spotty stuff throughout his career. So, no. Kyle Lowry, to me, has reached his potential.
Right. It always... I understand that part of it. But with Ben Simmons, sometimes it can't just be about what his potential, what he's going to be.
Why does he get criticized?
What?
He gets criticized because people think he had great potential.
Right. And my point is, I think so much of it is unfair. Because who he is right now is a guy that can be an all-star without being able to shoot.
When Zion comes into the league, you know why people are going to criticize him? Because his potential, all right? Potential is everything that you've never done. And once you get to pro basketball, you're supposed to fulfill your potential, especially after you've been in the pro game 4 years. This is not year one. This is not year two.
Well, it is year three. It's not 4 years yet. He missed the first year, and this is...
How many years has he been around NBA basketball?
This is third year. 3 years, because he had the redshirt year, and then this is his second year in the league. But you're right that Zion will have extra scrutiny on him. What I would hope for Zion, as I hope for any player, is...
Get you a jump shot.
Okay.
That's what you should hope.
But hold on. That's fine. But what I would also hope is, after a guy has one of the most important games of his career, a game where his team season is saved and he's the best player, that we don't focus on what he can't do. We focus on what he did last
night. Jenna asked me the question, what about moving forward? I expect Ben Simmons to play some games like this. So, okay, no problem. I ain't supposed to be cheering for Ben Simmons. I ain't part of his damn fan club. I'm out here trying to get a fan some type of insight of what Ben Simmons and why I'm disappointed in his overall. I saw the game last night. Absolutely. He played a great game. So what? Somebody's going to do that. You're going to do that. That's not my job to do that. I'm looking forward. I'm worried about him still not being able to shoot because you know something in Brooklyn? The damn bucket's still 10 feet. And he still has a problem 5 feet outside of that. I'm worried about Joel Embiid's conditioning. So those are actually real points.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right. Well, the Sixers and Nets are now tied at a game apiece. My potential will be fulfilled when I get to the commercial break, which is going to happen now.
And if you don't fulfill your potential, I'll be barking at you, Jenna.
Yeah, I know you will.
Oh, okay.
Did the Clippers expose major flaws in the Warriors? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, NBA champ Steven Jackson joins the show.
What up, man?
I forgot my ring again. I'll bring it tomorrow. I'll wear it tomorrow.
First things first, we got a gift for you. NFL heard you. Heard your voice. Man, when you were so disappointed Odell Beckham got traded to the Browns and everything with your Cowboys, said I'm done with the Cowboys, this is the NFL's got for you. Odell Beckham.
Oh, that's a nice jersey.
That's you in an XL, a slim fit.
Look at that.
My guy.
Hey, you know what? Only you can make this happen. NFL, see, I want to thank y'all, man. This is big. This is one of the hottest jerseys on the market right now. Everybody can't get these. This is big. Appreciate it, see.
You in the dog pound. Let me see.
In the collar, I saw that.
You see that?
I have to go to a game and sit in the dog pound. I win this year.
Okay, let's do this.
Let's do that.
Oh, do you know I happen to have a pass to all NFL games and everything? You want to go to a game? I got a pass.
If
to
you do, I am not surprised.
Oh, let's do it.
You're officially a Cleveland Browns fan now.
Yes.
Done with the Cowboys?
No, but I'm a Browns
okay,
fan.
Okay, I like that. Okay, no problem. Yeah, you can cheer for more than one team.
I'm not going to turn on them.
Dusty will tell you that. Dusty's got like 13 teams.
Yeah, both.
Let's talk some basketball. Before we talk some football, Blazers and the Thunder, Steven Jackson, squaring off in game two tonight. If the Thunder are going to even up these series, they both have to win because that'll happen. And then they'll need a better performance from Paul George. Shot just 8-for-24, including 4-for-15 from three in game one. Now, George insists that his shoulder is pain-free and that he's good to go for game two tonight.
It's well enough now to throw out any injury problems. It didn't have an effect during the game, regardless of me taking hits, falling to the deck. It didn't have any effect. Again, like I said, fact of the matter is I haven't shot or picked the ball up in 4 days. Yesterday was first day giving it a go on the court, so it's going to be some shots that go in and out, shots that don't fall. But I had a good day of prepare today, so I feel good about it.
All right, Steven, what do you expect to see? What do you want to see from the Thunder tonight?
Well, especially with the Thunder, I just want to see them block everything out and play basketball. I mean, Paul, everybody's heard this round, this mm-hmm. part of the season. You have to kind of some kind of way suck it up and be a better player for your team. They're on the road. They're playing against a good team in Portland. And I think they need to just get away from expecting Russ to do this and expecting Paul to do this. They need to play well as a team. That's the only way they're going to beat these guys with team ball.
Well, and what they needed, listen, Paul George pre-All-Star break was a fringe MVP candidate. Harden and Giannis were the top two, but he was a solid number three.
In the conversation.
He was reaching into that top two to see if he could make it a three-person race.
Right.
Post-All-Star break, and it coincides, of course, with the shoulder situation that he's had on his shooting shoulder. He's been a really good player, an all-star, but not an MVP candidate. His shooting percentage is down 5 points. His three-point percentage is down 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason the Thunder were able to stay afloat, the reason Thunder were able to go on that little run at the very end of the year to go from the 8th seed to the 6th seed is Russ, post-All-Star break, was far better than he was pre-All-Star break.
Right.
What the Thunder need to have any chance to make real noise in the playoffs, not just beat Portland or take Portland 6 or 7 games, but to be a real threat in round two, is to get pre-All-Star break Paul George, which means healthy Paul George, along with post-All-Star break Russ. That team is dangerous.
Consistency.
That team is a mm-hmm. threat. My concern is for Oklahoma City is, I know you said everyone's hurt this time of year, but there is a difference between an excuse and an explanation. For Paul George struggling from three-point range, it's not an excuse to me. It's an explanation that you can see the tape he has on his shoulder. What did he say, see? He couldn't shoot for 5 days?
Said he hadn't lifted his arm.
Right.
5 days before that.
And
yeah.
So now I think it's fair to critique him mm-hmm. that if
Neither
that's the case,
Steven, but I guess
then. But I mean, is that if that's the case, maybe don't shoot 15 threes. Maybe understand what your limitations
exactly,
are.
Exactly, Nick. Exactly.
To me, that's fair. But the inefficiency on the threes he does take, that might be expected right now.
Yes, there's a difference between making an excuse and trying to explain something. But the difference is, as ball players, when we're out there, there ain't no excuses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not out there trying to explain, hey, man, do you know that my shoulder's bonded? No, we don't care right. that your shoulder's bonded. Right. Now, you're right. Everyone is injured. No one is 100%. So the explanation, it's like Denny Green told us all the time, if you're late to practice and everything, call and everything, it's not as if I'm going to accept it, because typically 100% of all your excuses, you're going to tell the truth. But he was like, 99.9% of them are not acceptable. So, yeah, you can sit here and explain, be like, oh, man, the guy's got, I got a legitimate, it's not legitimate in pro sports. Mm-hmm. It's about results. And it might be his poor results are because of his shoulder. But if your shoulder, you can't lift it, then why are you shooting that many threes?
Right. Right.
It does not make sense. If you haven't touched the basketball, he said in the press conference, the first shots I got up were today. Well, won't you get closer to the bucket? Why don't you run some sets for him that get him better looks? And if I'm Portland, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm either putting whoever Paul George guards, I'm putting him either in the backcourt, and I'm setting three screens on him on his right side before we run our offense. And if he's on a guy who is not dribbling the ball up the court, I'm putting him in the right corner, and I'm having him come off two screens, and I'm getting ready to test that shoulder. So his explanation, all that stuff, it don't matter in the NBA. It's about getting the job done. I'm concerned about Paul George because that combination we're trying to get back, Russ playing his best, mm-hmm. Paul George playing before All-Star, it's hard to be able to get that in the postseason.
And that's what the things you said, that's what good coaches would do. They're going to put him through it. They're going to make him work that shoulder. But at the same time, if you out there, you're not hurt. If you hurt, just sit out because it's the playoffs. You're hurting your team. But if you out there, great players make adjustments. Post up more. Stop shooting as many threes.
Yes.
Make plays. I.e. Jimmy Butler.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He had a great game first game. Last night he played. He was a more defensive player and he made more plays on offense. You have to make your team better in other ways if you can't shoot.
The other X factor for tonight's game is the fact of the matter, you cannot have Enes Kanter be a dominant player in this series. We thought for Portland the loss of Nurkic was going to be enormous on the defensive end because Nurkic is an excellent rim defender. Mm-hmm. Enes Kanter might be the worst big man defender in basketball. Oklahoma City did not take advantage of it.
Yes.
They need to pick and roll him to death because if he's passable defensively, then he gets to stay out there. And when he's out there, he is an excellent offensive player. He's a good rebounder for his spot. And yeah. His footwork, since the year he tried to play at Kentucky and they wouldn't let him, since he came out of Turkey, mm-hmm. his footwork has been pro level. Mm-hmm. So you've got to pick and roll him to death to where he's off the court and all of a sudden they got to play small. Or Myers Leonard has to get out there because the Blazers are small. Dame is small. CJ's small. Seth Curry's one of their backup guards. Mm-hmm. He's small. You can't let Enes Kanter. Yeah.
You can't take advantage of him because you got Steven Adams. It's a game of matchups. If they had a more dominant center, more offensive center, then you could exploit that. But in the first game, Kanter was the MVP of that game, especially with those offensive tap outs late in the game.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.